Hello and welcome to our viewers here in the United States and around the world. I'm John King in Washington. Thank you for sharing a very tough news day with us. Hurricane Ian now accelerating towards South Carolina's coast. 2.6 million people in South Carolina, Georgia, and North Carolina, all under a hurricane warning this hour. Sandbags line Charleston streets. South Carolina's governor says, quote, we know what's coming. Zoom out, Florida still trying to comprehend Ian's toll and its pain. 3,000 plus rescues, at least 19 people who lost their lives. Both of those numbers we know are certain to rise. In Sanibel, biblical damage. That barrier island now only reachable by boat or by helicopter. City after city across Florida decimated by Hurricane Ian. Fort Myers, a 7-mile stretch along the beach reduced to heaps of concrete debris. The message from the people trying to pick up the pieces, trying to pick up their lives. Send help.
Lost everything last night.
Sorry.
Everything. Family's okay. Dogs are okay. Parents are okay. Lost everything we've had. Been in the house since 1987. Pictures, memories. Gone.
Let's take you straight to Charleston now, the community waiting for Ian next. Charleston, South Carolina. CNN's Miguel Marquez is there live for us. Miguel, high tide just as the hurricane gets set to come ashore. What are you seeing?
Yeah, it is pretty miserable right now. This is about the worst that we have seen. The winds are really starting to gust up, and you can feel that rain as it's coming in, being pushed by the wind. And when it starts to hurt your face, and even you can feel it through the clothing, you know it's getting bad. I want to show you something what the bay here looks like right now. The water really coming up. The tide is not expected to be as high as they thought it was earlier. It was forecast to be just over 9 feet earlier today. Now they're saying it's going to be about 7.5 feet. One other good little bit for Charleston is that the storm is passing, it looks like, to the north and to the east of us, which means a lot of this wind is going to continue to push the water out into the ocean, toward the ocean. I want to show you, so this street is blocked off right now. There are some folks out and about, but, you know, this is not a terrible storm for Charleston so far. They are blocking some streets. There is some local flooding. There is power out to several people in different areas, but it is low country. They are used to this. Certainly, they're not expecting anything as bad as certain Florida has seen, but they are on alert. Right now is sort of the worst of this. They're expecting that they may see some flooding in this area and other parts of Charleston. Right now, everything's in place to deal with this storm. The wind clearly picking up right now, and they are just going to wait it out. They're asking people to stay home and enjoy the day in the warmth of your own home. John?
And Miguel, if you can hear me, and if for any reason you need to go, please do. But you just made the point. Charleston is used to this. Charleston has routine flooding after heavy rains. There's a fear of some officials that complacency sets in, and you think, we'll ride this out like we did the last one. What is your sense?
Yeah, I think that's always a fear, but because of how hard this storm hit Florida, people are on much higher alert. They have been watching for much of the day. I mean, this is the worst of what we've seen in this storm so far. We do see a few people coming down here to sort of look around, but the water hasn't come up as nearly as quickly as they thought it would. And so far, Charleston seems to be doing okay through that, if one can. But right now, we seem to be probably in the worst part of the storm that Charleston's going to see. John?
Miguel Marquez live for us right there on the coast. Miguel, keep in touch throughout the hour as the storm gets closer and closer. And let's get more important perspective now. Chad Myers is standing by for us in the CNN Severe Weather Center. You see Miguel there, Chad. You've been through this time after time after time after time when he talks about the rain coming in sideways. Where is he in terms of his encounter with Ian?
He is just to the west of Ian, which likely saved damages in millions of dollars for Charleston, because the 5 a.m. forecast was for the surge, the tide, to get to 9 feet. Charleston floods at about 6.5. So yes, we are still going to flood a foot, but we're not going to flood 2.5 feet into all of the homes really in the downtown. Some sandbags can take care of that. It is still an 85 mile per hour storm, and it's still going to be moving right on shore in the low country of South Carolina, likely very close to Georgetown. I mean, big city there, big town, right along these marshes, though. So as the rain continues to come in and push the water in, I've been looking at the Merle's Inlet Marsh pictures that I've been able to see on the webcam, and the water's completely over Goat Island. Now, the good news is they evacuated the goats yesterday. Goats are not as hard to evacuate as people, apparently. They just got right in the boat. Rain across parts of Carolinas and into Virginia. Some of this will be flooding again. 4 to 6 inches of rain will probably put down 2 to 3 feet worth of surge in parts of North Carolina. So that's still something to be concerned with. Winds are going to gust to hurricane strength, even into Myrtle Beach and all the way up from Garden City, really all the way to Cherry Grove. Here's the wind field. It's going to be blowing again right up into the Carolinas. We're probably going to get some trees down into North Carolina for sure. Virginia, likely. And believe it or not, John, this starts to rain in New York City tomorrow morning. This gets all the way north of there. Here's the latest radar forecast, moving you up into Raleigh and Charlotte. And when these big cells come over you, there will be wind 40 to 50 miles per hour, even into North Carolina, Virginia, and possibly even all the way up, even into, let's call it, just Maryland, Virginia, the Delmarva, and all the way up even to New York City. With some of these bigger cells, the wind will definitely come in. Now, I have one more thing to show you, an Earth cam from Myrtle Beach. Earlier, tide way out here. Now, with high tide and the surge, right up to the marsh, and I've just looked at some pictures coming in from Surfside, coming in from Garden City. There are waters in the streets right now over the top of these dunes, because the dunes down there in the lower part of the low country of the Grand Strand, a lot lower down there, and the water is over the top of some of those dunes.
Let me ask you, Chad, a little perspective. We watched when Ian first hit southwestern Florida. You have the barrier islands there. We've seen all the heavy damage in Sanibel, for example. It's a different kind of a coast. You have the jagged coastline of South Carolina on the Atlantic side. Now you're on the other side. Obviously, it has crossed the Florida Peninsula. But you have Morris Island to the south, Sullivan's Island, the Island of Palms. When you go up, you have the inlets, you have the rivers. How does that complicate things? Does that area help protect the coast, or is that water resupply potentially damaging to the coast?
Due to the fact that people build along the intercoastal, now that water is going to come in from the other side. So yes, it still does help, but you just have to stay away. And, you know, as people that want to live by water, not build so close, John.
Chad Myers for us in the Severe Weather Center. We'll keep in touch, Chad, throughout the hours and, of course, throughout the day ahead. Chad, thank you. It's been a long week. We appreciate everything. We want to show you some of the damage Ian has done. South Carolina is waiting. Florida is suffering. CNN's John Berman took an aerial tour. It shows only debris where homes and businesses in Fort Myers stood just days ago.
All that debris just littered everywhere. These were buildings? This was the building right there?
There were buildings, restaurants, and what used to be the Fort Myers Pier. The empty spots that you see there were homes.
So these... On this beach here, there used to be homes?
You're going to see the empty lots right here. As you see, those lots right there, those were homes. Those were hotels. Those were real property, 2, 3, 4, 5 stories high, washed away.
CNN's Randy Kaye is there in Fort Myers, Florida, live for us. Randy, devastating when you see John Berman's view from above. You are at the ground level and seeing more of it.
Yeah, we certainly are, John. We are in Fort Myers Beach. And if you take a look here, just behind me, you can see some of what we have seen along the way. That Captain Tony's Fishing Adventures, that's a really popular tourism boat here. Meanwhile, it's now on ground. It was pushed out of the Gulf and onto dry land. And you can see there's another boat at the behind it, that smaller boat. And then there's a trailer. That smaller boat was actually on that trailer. All of it was pushed onto dry land. And then there's a couple of other boats behind there. Both are 50 tons, actually. We spoke to the owner. This was his business. It was like a floating hotel. He actually rode the storm out on one of those boats, which now has a giant hole in it. And he was on it as it was carried to dry land. We spoke to him earlier, and this is what he told us.
Noisy, windy, a lot of rain, obviously. We held our own for a long time until about 3 or so. We were able to keep the boat in the slip with the engines. But after that, when the tide shifted, came higher and the winds really ramped up, then the boat released and then we cruised across the parking lot.
He said it was absolutely incredible. He said he actually wasn't that scared. The boat is made of steel and he felt like he was safe. He also didn't think the storm was going to be so bad. But he watched other buildings collapse into the water and float away, others that had been on dry land. Here's what else we're finding in Fort Myers Beach. That was a marina across the way there. That's now shattered. There's restaurants that are shattered. We saw boats that are basically been tossed around by toys. They're in the trees. They're on the side of the road. There's a bunch of twisted metal and boats down there. And we're not far from the Gulf. If we went this way, we would go right onto the actual beach of Fort Myers Beach, what John Berman was flying over. But there are so many, there's so much destruction and so much debris in the road that they're turning a lot of people back, John. But this is just one example of somebody and his story to tell that we're seeing along the way here in Fort Myers Beach.
Before I let you go, Randy, I just want to get your perspective because your experience. And as I talk to you, we have some live aerial pictures of Sanibel Island, not too far from you, out the Barrier Island. You see the causeway has been destroyed. You're watching these pictures come in. And this is the challenge, Randy, whether it's Sanibel or where you are in Fort Myers. Day one, it's do we need to find people? Do we need to rescue people? Day two is sort of the woe. As you look at the devastation, you try to have some context. And now you start to just add it up. How long will it take? How much will it cost? When can I go home if my house is no longer there? What are you seeing?
Absolutely. And we have seen this steady stream of traffic, which is pretty remarkable because they're all being turned away when they get to the beach. Some of them are just curious people. They want to see some of the damage. But I'm sure some of them are homeowners who would like to go and see what's going on with their homes and what's left of them, if anything, certainly at Fort Myers Beach. And even the boat owner who we spoke with, we saw the power company come by. The power lines are actually what stopped his boat from even going further to even where we are across the street. So he's sitting on power lines. So there's just so much work to be done and so many questions from people about what's next, John.
What's next? It is an excellent and a pressing question. It will be weeks. It will be months. For many, it will be years. Randy Kaye, live on the ground for us in Fort Myers. You see the pictures on the left from Sanibel. And again, just imagine what you're seeing there. What, see as it pulls out there, just the scope of this devastation. That's just one of the dozens of communities hit. Up next for us, more from the front lines of the storm. The Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, the President Joe Biden jumping on the phone again this morning. Governor DeSantis had a briefing earlier today. High praise for the first responders putting their lives at risk.
Rescue personnel have gone to more than 3,000 homes in the hardest hit areas, going door to door to check on the occupants of those residences. There are over 1,000 dedicated rescue personnel who are going up and down the coastline.
You're looking at live pictures here, our CNN affiliate WFTS. This is Sanibel Island, Florida, an aerial view. The causeway there still broken by Hurricane Ian. You see vehicles on the streets there as they try to assess the damage. Number one, is there anyone who still needs help? Number two, what can we do to repair the causeway? Number three, just start to think about the scope of what you are seeing, the rebuilding cost, the rebuilding time, the rebuilding pain. Some of that is resort area, some of that is people's homes. Again, as you watch that pull out, it just gives you a reminder, just in this one small barrier island off the coast of Southwest Florida, it's just one of the many communities absolutely devastated by Ian. The pain, the damage, the cost in places varies from town to town. As we watch live here, this image again from our affiliate WFTS in Sanibel, Florida, let's bring in the mayor of a nearby community, Fort Myer, Kevin Anderson. Mr. Mayor, we were talking during the break. Our Randy Kaye was just on the ground in your city. It took a good punch, too. And yet, during the break, you were saying you feel somewhat lucky when you see pictures. Talk to your colleagues in places like Sanibel Island.
Oh, absolutely. As devastating as it is here in downtown Fort Myers, it is nothing compared to what our neighbors and our friends on the beach in Sanibel have gone through.
And so as you get to this point, Ian hits, you hunker down, then you come out the next day and you try to figure it out. The more you learn, the more your to-do list changes. What is on yours today? What is most urgent for you at this hour that maybe is different from it would have been if we were talking early this morning or last night?
Well, yesterday our crews worked very tirelessly, long days, cleaning up roads. They're still out here, so that's a plus. But right now our focus is we've got to get the electricity on, especially for our water plants and our wells, because right now a majority of the city is without water.
And do you have any prognosis? Let's focus just on the water supply. Obviously critical. You want to bring on your infrastructure, the most needed infrastructure, back online first. Do you have any estimate? Is this a Florida Power question? Is this a state question? Is this a federal partners helping you, the contractors coming in?
Initially, it's going to be a Florida Power and Light and City of Fort Myers effort. As we get into it, then there'll be state resources and federal resources to help out. But right now, there's an immediate need. Get the electricity to those water plants and wells so we can supply water to the people.
And if people can't get water from the municipal system, obviously, are you getting enough supplies for the people who are still in the community, whether it's water, whether it's food, whether it's other critical supplies like medicine? How's the supply chain working?
So we do have some businesses. Publix, for example, has opened up some of their stores, which and they have water and ice available. We are waiting for a delivery today to be able to set up several distribution points for water, food, and ice. We're hoping to be able to push that out either this afternoon or first thing tomorrow morning.
Mr. Mayor, you're experienced at this, so you come into it with a list, and you have a talented emergency management team. They come into it with a list. Were there any big surprises here? You're having to deal with something that maybe you didn't anticipate.
Well, I think that the sheer magnitude of the damage from the water, I mean, it has literally come in. I was in a second-story condo downtown, and I watched the water rise to the point where it was flooding the businesses underneath. And then to see how it just picked these boats, these massive boats up. I mean, I'm standing on top of a floating concrete pier that is on the patio of a restaurant more than a block away from the river. I mean, the sheer magnitude of the water. And then, of course, it's always surprising the number of people who fail to heed the advice of evacuating.
Mr. Mayor Kevin Anderson in Fort Myers, sir, we're grateful for your time. We know how busy you are, and it is remarkable to keep hearing stories from veterans like yourself. People have seen this before about how remarkable, how different, how powerful Ian was. We'll keep in touch, sir, in the days ahead as your city begins its recovery process. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, and I can just say that sure. We are so fortunate to have the first responders we have, and the tremendous, outstanding work that they're doing to help the citizens recover.
Amen to that. We don't say thank you enough. We say thank you in a crisis moment like this. We should say thank you every single day over and over, Mr. Mayor. It's an excellent point.
Absolutely.
Thank you, sir, for your perspective.
Thank you.
Hurricane Ian this hour bearing down on South Carolina, already in Myrtle Beach. Tide level swelling to nearly 10 feet. That's the highest level measured since 2020. Let's get to Myrtle Beach now. CNN's Nick Valencia is live for us right there. Nick, tell us what you're seeing.
Well, the force of this wind is just incredible, John. This is the most severe that we've felt this weather all day as we're getting hit by another gust of wind. And that rain is just hammering us sideways. You can see the force of this water behind me. Those waves looking like between 10 and 15 feet. Some estimates put it closer to 20 feet. I just got off the phone with the emergency management here. They tell me that there are about 7,000 people without power in the county, but their biggest concern here is a high tide is just ending, and the storm surge that comes with that, about 7.5 feet of storm surge, which could be a disaster for the lower-lying areas. The mayor tells me here, Brenda Bethune, that there's been no road closures or bridges closed in Myrtle Beach, but surrounding areas have had roads closed as this water continues to hammer our crew here. We are fortunate to say that there's no one that we see here on the beach. That's a big message that the mayor here wanted to stress. There's no mandatory evacuation order in place here. So when I asked her if she was satisfied with the level of precautions that people were taking, she said it's really hard to tell. So the assumption is that most people decided to stay put. Now is not the time to come outside. You could see why, judging by just how harsh this rain and wind is. We'd love to get closer to the beach here, but we just can't. That water is coming closer and closer to where we are here, to the hotel that we're staying at, and you can see those waves just crashing ashore. It is miserable here with landfall expected south of us in the next couple of hours. Right now, emergency management saying stay inside. Now is not the time to come outside with the worst of it expected pretty soon. John?
Pretty soon. Nick Valencia on the ground. You and your crew stay safe, and we will stay in touch. You see the wind blast there knocking Nick off his feet a little bit. Nick, stay safe. We'll touch base in the hours ahead, obviously, as the storm gets closer. Let's move to the south now, to Charleston, and bring in Charleston City Councilman Stephen Bowden. Sir, grateful for your time. At the top of the hour, I don't know if you were listening, but Chad Meyer says the storm has turned a little bit, and it looks like Charleston will be spared a direct hit. But what are you hearing about, you know, what what to expect, and B, what any needs. What's the biggest need?
So we're in the worst part of the storm right now. Over the next few hours, we're going to see flooding rains. We're at high tide right now. Fortunately, it's passing to our north, so we're not going to see the surge that we thought we might see. So you're right. We're going to dodge probably the worst of it. Right now, we just need people to stay inside. If you don't have to be out and about, just hunker down, get some hurricane snacks like we've got, and just ride this out for the next few hours.
Avoiding the worst of it doesn't mean not getting bad. Is that message, do you think, this, in a community where people are used to flooding even after heavy rains, at least minor flooding, is it hard sometimes to crack the complacency, if you will?
Oh, yeah. You know, we're a coastal town. People are used to riding out hurricanes. So I think it might have been a little tough to get the message out that, you know, we might be looking at a real significant flooding event. But people know what to do. I think they have enough respect for our first responders not to be out endangering those folks. City is fully mobilized to do what we need to do. So once the worst of it passes, we'll start cleaning up. We're just asking for folks to cooperate.
You were elected to the council last year in 2021, born and raised in coastal Virginia. You're surrounded, of course, by Charleston hurricane, tropical storm veterans. What's your own experience from coastal Virginia of having to deal? Hopefully, hopefully Ian does not hit you hard. But what's your experience?
My formative experience, I guess, was another eye storm, Isabel, back in the day, that really took a toll on us. Power was out for, you know, a week or so. So I'm no stranger to storms. We've lived through plenty of storms here in Charleston. Thankfully, we've avoided the worst, but, you know, all it takes is one, and you got to stay vigilant all the time.
It's a very smart message. All it takes is one, and stay vigilant. Councilman Stephen Bowden in Charleston. Sir, keep in touch. We hope you're right about the path. We hope you're right that things are minimal there. But keep in touch. If we can do anything to get out the message, we'll be here for you. As we go to break, I want to show you some live pictures. We want to go back now to Sanibel Island. You're looking here. A rescue underway on the ground. See the helicopter there. Someone being escorted along the beach. Again, heroic work by first responders of all stripes, from the Coast Guard, from state and local agencies, volunteers. Live picture there in Sanibel Island, Florida, from our affiliate WFTS. Someone being led to help aboard that chopper. We'll be right back. Live pictures there, Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Hurricane Ian, due to make landfall in South Carolina just a short time from now, later this afternoon. You see the waves there on the beach. First, we want to take you to Naples, Florida, of course, one of the city's hardest hit by this monster hurricane as it made its way across the Florida Peninsula. CNN's Brian Todd is there in Southwest Florida. Brian, tell us what you're seeing.
Well, John, we've been going street by street by street and getting new assessments just about everywhere we've gone of damage here and new visuals of the damage. We did get a tip that the pier was damaged severely, and this is the main pier in Naples, and you can see it right there. We're going to train in on the last third of it that goes out to the ocean. Looks like the walkway there was completely blown away by the storm surge. The pylons supporting the walkway hanging on, but just barely. Now, the damage, the storm surge was so intense and so high, about 12 feet high, it pushed the water well past these houses here. I'm going to walk over here, and our photojournalist Wayne Cross is going to kind of zoom past me into the damage in this courtyard of this house here. The water pushed past here, and we were told by a contractor who just came here to do some assessments that it was the water line was about 7 or 8 feet high in this house. It just swept all the sand into the patio here. There's no patio left visible. You can see the damage to the house. The contractor told us that the sand has piled on all the way through inside that first floor of the house. The city manager, John, told us that the damage to the city property will go to probably about $20 million, he says, he believes. The damage to personal property like this could extend to about $200 million. And from what we've seen, that's a conservative estimate. He told us that was a very conservative estimate. On street after street here, John, I have to tell you, we come across houses and apartment complexes where people have tossed their beds, their couches, their dressers right by the curb because everything is ruined. And you really get a kind of a perspective of just the kind of disruption and the devastation that this has taken on lives. For each of those people, you know, obviously you've got to throw all your stuff out. You got to get your insurance adjuster in to see what they can and can't pay for. You've got to buy new furniture. We saw two vehicles that were swept into a canal, so you've got to do your damage assessment there. A lot of the people here, you know, may not have the money to really completely rebuild, so they're just kind of getting their arms around all of that and trying to just get an assessment of how devastated and disrupted their lives have been. But again, those figures, staggering. $20 million in city damage, $200 million in personal property damage to houses like this.
Ryan Todd for us live on the ground. And it's important you give that perspective, family by family by family, piece by piece by piece, sadness by sadness. Ryan Todd live for us on the ground in Naples. Let's bring in someone who understands the devastation in his community, the Naples Fire Chief. Pete DeMaria. Chief, thanks for your time. I know how incredibly busy you are right now. Let's start with the urgency of the moment. You're 24 hours now after Ian moved on. When you're looking at your to-do list, what's the most important thing today to accomplish in Naples?
Yeah, so today we're really working hard to restore water. We're on a boil water notice. We've gotten all the streets cleared best as possible. We can make access to all of our communities. And we have some challenging things going on with restoration of power as it attempts to come back on. We've seen some structure fires. We had a working fire last night where we lost a home down in one of our communities. And so it's been very challenging. We've been constantly on the go with search and rescue of properties that have have been flooded out, and we're going house by house to check and make sure that everyone is safe in the community.
Do you believe that everyone is accounted for at this moment, or do you still have a list you're working through for people who maybe family relatives from elsewhere are calling in saying, haven't been able to reach my mother, haven't been able to reach my sibling?
So we received a lengthy list, and we've gone through that, and we've accounted for everyone. But that list continues to grow each day. We get calls throughout the day, and then we send out teams to make sure that we've either touched base with them or we find out where they evacuated to. So we're working really hard to make sure we account for everyone.
You mentioned the urgency of getting the power back up. When it comes to your first responders, if they need to get somebody to a hospital facility, if they need to get them medical attention, do you have resources in the community that are up online, or are you having to take them elsewhere?
So we were fortunate enough that we were able to clear the path to our main hospital. It's right in the middle of our community. So we're fortunate we got that open, and they're receiving patients right now. So we're transported right to NCH, right in the middle of our community. So we're lucky about that part.
If my math is right, Chief, you've been on the force for 33 years, 6 years as the chief. Just help us with context here. We see these individual scenes. We go to our reporters all up and down the coast. Help us understand. You ever seen anything like this?
I went through Andrew. I've been through every storm, Wilma, Charlie, nothing like this. Absolutely nothing. The surge was devastating to our community, devastating to our station. It flooded our station. Fortunately, we're set up to take a certain amount of storm surge. But in my wildest dream did I ever think we would be in a position that we are now. One of our engines, we completely flooded, and we had to push it out of the bay. And just a tremendous amount of loss community-wide here. And by far the worst storm that I've been through.
Chief, if people in your community had power and they could watch this interview, they would want to say thank you. So let me, on behalf of them, say thank you to you and the men and women who work for you. I'm sure they're all exhausted as you are, but it's amazing in your community and elsewhere as we see the heroism that comes out of the sadness. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you. Up next for us, other big global headlines. Vladimir Putin makes his Ukraine land grab official, and the global condemnation now includes new sanctions from the Biden White House. A major escalation today in Russia's war on Ukraine. The White House already announcing new sanctions that, in response to Vladimir Putin this morning, make it official, illegally annexing parts of Ukraine. Western governments across the globe condemning the move, which is a clear violation of international law. In that signing ceremony you see right there, President Putin says those territories, in his view, now part of Russia. His words, forever.
I want the Kiev authorities and the real masters in the West to hear me and remember those people who live in these four regions are becoming our citizens forever.
Our Chief White House correspondent Caitlin Collins standing by outside the White House. First, though, let's get to Nick Payton-Walsh. He's in Kramatorsk. Nick, walk us through, from your perspective on the ground, what happened today and what are its implications for the war?
Well, I think what happened today was what everybody had been expecting, which is Russia formally declaring with a huge degree of falsehood in each statement that even where I'm standing here in Ukraine is now effectively Russia. The problem they have, of course, is that the areas, the four areas they say that are now Russia, they do not militarily control. All of them, particularly here in Donetsk and Luhansk. What we saw in Moscow, though, was a bid by Putin to cast this, as he always has, in a revisionist historical way, as Russia and even the Soviet Union essentially being victimized by the West and forced into a position to protect the wider Russian Slavic people. Nonsense, frankly, if you consider the extraordinary damage they've done to the people they claim to protect since they invaded in February. But it was a clear message, and one certainly which you saw slightly bewildered, shocked faces in that Kremlin hall, perhaps not entirely sharing the view of reality or of the world as it currently is that Vladimir Putin was trying to extol. What does it mean on the ground here, though? Well, Vladimir Putin didn't directly threaten to use nuclear weapons to protect the territory he now claims is Russia, which his officials have done in the past week. He hinted at that possibility, but it was not something he specifically said. So we are still now facing a situation where Russia's conventional forces are losing. They're not using this partial mobilization to get enough people to the front to change the dynamic here. And we're certainly seeing, even when he was speaking, Ukrainian forces moving forwards, particularly around a strategic hub here called Lyman. It's a railway town that's pretty much encircled now by Ukrainian forces, with thousands of important, well-equipped Russian troops effectively cut off and stranded there. That could cause another potential domino effect near where I'm standing of further Russian territorial losses. We'll have to wait and see. But we have remarkably seen Ukraine on their front forward dismissing this annexation, frankly, as no consequence, asking to quickly join NATO if possible. They've always wanted that, but it injects an extra level of geopolitical tension at this important time. And Ukraine saying they will continue to liberate land here. So for all the pageantry in Moscow, fears that Russia may feel it has other cards to play, but no change to the ground here. John?
Peyton Walsh on the ground for us in Ukraine. Caitlin Collins, let's go to the White House. Now, the White House very quick to announce new sanctions, but what is their perspective strategically? Putin can look at that map we just had on the screen. He took Crimea 14 years ago. He thinks he's going to hold these territories. What is the White House plan to make that not so?
Well, that's a big question for the White House, which is not just that they're condemning it, but what do they believe happens next? Because if you listen to that speech from President Putin today, he basically framed this as this existential crisis between the West and Russia. And he spoke in these very brazen terms about how he views this conflict and where it's going from here. And so the White House is condemning the move that they knew was coming with the illegal annexation of these four Ukrainian territories. They are saying it is brazen, that it is a violation of international law. It tramples on the United Nations Charter. And as President Biden said today in a statement, showing its contempt for peaceful nations everywhere by doing this. And they are also taking action, John, imposing these sanctions and working on really trying to further cripple Russia's technology and defense sectors. That's by going after companies that they say or entities that provide any kind of political or economic support to Russia's illegal annexation of these four territories. They say that they will impose sanctions. They will put in place these export controls. That's a step that they're taking. They're also targeting top Russian officials here with this newest round of sanctions, John. But a big question is going to be the bigger ones here of, you know, with Ukraine saying that they are going to submit this application to join NATO, that they want it to be an expedited process. What is the White House's response to that? We haven't seen that so far. President Biden did say earlier he will be speaking on this later today about this move from Russia, in addition to the statement that he put out and what we heard from the Treasury and Commerce departments on this latest round of an attempt to punish it. But also, you know, it's raising a bigger question of how this conflict could potentially end, especially with that speech from President Putin today.
Defiance from President Putin. We will hear how President Biden counters. Caitlin Collins at the White House. Thank you. Nick Peyton Walsh as well. A little quick self-correction. I said 14 years ago Putin took Crimea. In 2014, the Russians took Crimea, annexed Crimea 8 years ago. Another global story, this one shocking, after at least 23 people, including students, killed in a suicide bombing at a school in Afghanistan. Warning, what you're about to see is quite disturbing. Witnesses say most of the victims here were young women. A 20-year-old who barely avoided the blast telling CNN she is still in shock that she saw her classmates soaked in blood and found her closest friend dead. Police officials say the attack took place in the middle of a practice exam. Up next for us, Hurricane Ian taking aim at South Carolina. We're also getting a closer look at the devastation Ian left behind in Florida. Live pictures here right now as South Carolina stares down Hurricane Ian. Landfall due a bit later this afternoon, and as you can see, conditions rapidly getting worse. The storm already causing record-level tide in some places. This morning, new information from the Florida governor, Ron DeSantis, giving a clearer picture of Ian's destruction there. Crews have had to clear 1,100 miles of roadway. Shelters were stretched to capacity, housing some 20,000-plus people. Also, 1.9 million residents across Florida still have not had the lights go back on. Sanibel and Pine Islands off the southwest coast now both entirely cut off from mainland Florida. CNN's Bill Ware was there with the Cajun Navy.
Here we are. We're going to rescue some people off of Sanibel, which is cut off from the world right now.
Yeah.
So it's very apropos.
Trying to help people out if they need help.
You need help?
You want to get out of here?
I'm in the bedroom.
Give us a minute, we'll come there.
We follow the cry for help ashore on Sanibel to find a gentleman eager to accept the boat lift, but unable to convince his better half.
We're going.
To where?
Fort Myers.
The bridge is knocked out.
I'm not ready to go.
A cursory stroll around this part of Sanibel reveals plenty of hazards, like the hiss of natural gas spewing from a broken tank. But in one of the most coveted zip codes in Florida, the construction mostly held up, which is in stark contrast to Pine Island.
Look at this one. Absolutely flattened.
Especially the mobile homes of the working class and retirees living in St. James City.
Before we go, some new images showing rescues of some very, very valuable family members from this storm. First responders plucking dozens and dozens of dogs, some cats as well, from floodwaters in Orange County. The message on Facebook? Pets are family, period. Thanks for joining us in Inside Politics. Try to have a peaceful weekend. Anna Cabrera picks up our coverage right now.